Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Robinson, Associate Administrator for FEMA's Mission Support Bureau. Also joining us from IBM is Angela Carrington. So, David, would you tell us about the initiatives you're pursuing to improve FEMA's operational performance?
Sure. I think the biggest one I'd like to touch on is a new initiative that we've got going on that ties into our workforce management initiative. It's about cadre management. Okay. Cadre management to us is about how do we manage the disaster workforce. Obviously a subset of the entire workforce, but the disaster workforce has some unique requirements that are related to disasters. And so my colleague, Associate Administrator for Response and Recovery, Joe Nemec, is heading in his team are heading an effort around cadre management. And we're defining cadres as 23 cadres in very aligned by functional area, so skill sets, if you will. So you'll have an acquisition cadre, you'll have a response cadre, you'll have a recovery cadre, an HR cadre. And all of the critical skill sets that we need in a disaster, we have one of these cadres. And the cadre can include full-time permanent employees. It can include disaster people who are specifically focused on disaster work, in addition, not just the normal day-to-day ops, but disaster work only. It also includes the folks that we have who are reservists. We have several thousand reservists who are part of these cadres. And we're managing these cadres. We're starting to manage them a little bit differently than we had before. We used to just consider them about the reservists, they would call the reserve workforce up in a disaster and be done. But really now we're looking at the holistic view of cadre management. What does that mean? And it really kind of has five key things. One is availability, staffing and availability. Do we have the right staff? Are they available when we need them? So we might have a cadre of 400 people in a particular skill set in disaster A in North Dakota. We only need 20 of them, but we need to make sure that those 20 are available. Secondly, is the training and education and the professional development of the cadre. We've got a set of skills and task books, if you will, a group of skill sets and training that is required for each one of these skill sets that we require everyone to be current on. And so through a system that we use, we can monitor a person's tracking through the training and education requirements that are levied on them for their educational requirements in a disaster workforce. Third is equipping them and making sure they're prepared. Do they have the right equipment? Do they have their laptop? Do they have a cell phone? Do they have any protective equipment that they might need in the disaster zone? Do they have other specialized equipment that they might need? Fourth is qualifying them from their experiential requirements. So you may have training, but if you've never deployed to a disaster zone, you've never had the experience of working in a disaster, then we need each one of our cadre members, our disaster workforce, to have those experiential requirements. And we're going to lay all those out so that there's clear expectations of what those are. And then finally, it's performance management. And this is why everything I've just said here in this, it really ties right back to the whole of workforce management is sort of a subset. But if we've got the right availability and we've got the right training and the right preparedness and equipping them, the right experiential requirements, and we're monitoring their performance on the job in disasters, then we'll make sure that we have enhanced the workforce. If we're managing these cadres in this way, we equate that to operational readiness.
So, David, we understand that making FEMA an expeditionary organization is a key priority for the administrator. So can you tell us what that really means and what your role and your organization is in making that vision a reality?
Sure. Expeditionary is one of those terms that a lot of people get confused about because they're not sure, does that mean that I have to be deployed all the time or whatever does it mean? It means kind of fundamentally that we are able to work wherever we need to work. The work is what you do, not where you do it. And so if we are equipping folks with the right kinds of equipment, the laptop, the cell phone, et cetera, and we are making sure that their connectivity is solid so they can have wireless connection or they have some way to get back into our networks to the systems that they need to operate, then that helps them whether they're working in the headquarters during non-disaster times or they're working in a disaster area, that they're there. But it's also a mindset. Expeditionary means that you may be called up to deploy to a disaster to help in your skill set or a skill set that you've designated. One of the things that I learned in Hurricane Sandy back in 2012, I had been in job at FEMA in my current job for 1 month, and Sandy hit. I came to work that day, and they said, here's your first disaster. While not exactly a catastrophic disaster, it was a big one. But it gave me the opportunity to observe mission support's role in all of this, and how does mission support play? So in addition to the infrastructural things that we were doing, I also observed that we were providing a lot of the surge workforce that was needed to just sort of do some extra hands on deck. And we were doing that by show of hands, who volunteers to go. And I came back from Sandy thinking that we needed to rethink that. That if we're just doing it by volunteerism, then what's going to happen is the people who are really excited and enthusiastic are going to all volunteer. And some of those day-to-day steady state operations that I am responsible for, just to keep the lights on, to keep the power on, to keep the systems running, to keep the facilities open, to keep things secure, might drop off. So we had to take another look at mission support in particular and say, okay, we're going to look at not by person, but by position. What are the things that absolutely must stay on, and how many people and which positions do we need to keep them on? So out of my workforce, we've identified like 200 people that if the disaster happens, these 200 people stay and they keep doing their day-to-day job because that's what keeps the infrastructure going. Then there's a whole nother group of people that have disaster titles, if you will. They're already qualified with disaster workforce type situations, and they would be deployed in a variety of situations to do those kinds of things. It could be acquisition professionals who go to the field to do acquisition work. It could be IT professionals who go and do systems work, get networks running in our forward deployed field offices. It could be any number of skill sets that are helping in various disasters. And then there's going to be those who aren't necessarily going to do their specific skill, but they're going to help out in something else. So they might be a general workforce to go and help with meeting survivors in their homes and going to help collect information from survivors and helping that kind of effort. There's also going to be some subset of people in mission support that are going to sort of drop their day-to-day job, but stay in place because that's where they can best support the disaster. So, for example, we might add people to help desk operations for call centers or something, but they can do it from right where they sit. They don't have to deploy anywhere, but they're deployed in place. So we've sort of rethought how we organize ourselves around the disaster workforce, and that makes us more expeditionary because we're thoughtfully and deliberately deciding when something goes wrong, how are we going to respond to that? It's not make it up as you go.
David, in our conversation, you've underscored the importance of the people in your organization to meet mission. The people, really, the workforce matters. How do you keep them engaged in an era of fiscal austerity where there's sometimes really painful challenges that they face?
Great question. But let me tell you that almost to a person, everyone that I've ever met at FEMA comes to FEMA for the mission. The mission at FEMA is so important. It's about helping American citizens, helping people right here when they are in crisis, when they are most in need, most vulnerable. And that's a mission that everyone has a very, very widespread commitment to. And so when we have times when we're in fiscal austerity, when we had the sequestration earlier in this fiscal year, in spite of that, there were people who were keeping track and kind of keeping connected to make sure that everything was okay because there were disasters going on. Mm-hmm. And so it's challenging when there's budget cuts. But when you have such a compelling mission, everybody just bends over backwards to try to figure out how we can do this in innovative and creative ways. How can we do this less for less money, faster, cheaper, better? And I think it's the mission of FEMA that keeps people motivated.
How is FEMA's Mission Support Bureau providing the tools and resources necessary for the agency to meet its mission? We will ask David Robinson, Associate Administrator for FEMA's Mission Support Bureau, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.